You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. We've got a great show for you tonight, talking hashtag saved the crew, and a whole bunch of other playoff implications with a bunch of midweek MLS regular season games sprinkled in there. My trusty co-host, Daniel Sperry, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I was up late last night for the end of that Sporting KC game. I actually had to switch my shift at work because I was supposed to open and go 5 a.m. to 1. And I got it switched to 8 o'clock so I could actually get like 8 hours sleep after the game was over. But I still was up late for Sporting. Interesting game last night. A lot of fun. We'll talk about it later. But yeah, I'm doing pretty good now.
Excellent stuff. And in joining us for the first time in a while to talk all things Columbus Crew related, my good friend John Bava. John, how are you?
Pretty good. A lot of exciting news coming out of Columbus. It's a little cold where I am in Buffalo, but that's kind of par for the course this time of year. But looking forward to doing some good discussion here.
Excellent stuff. Any hot takes on the current state of the Bills and the Buffalo Sabres right now at all?
The quarterback situation could be a little bit better for the Bills, but, I'm suddenly kind of optimistic about the Sabres, with the way they got started to the season. I mean, they got a couple wins, but, one game they win, the next they, lose by, 5 goals like they did to Colorado last week. So we'll see what happens there.
Okay, let's get into it, John. Obviously, the big news, Dan and I talked about it a little bit, but we kind of wanted it with some, I'd say, some Columbus-focused context of the news of potentially a joint ownership group between a few business people in Columbus and the ownership group, or a section of the ownership group within the NFL's Cleveland Browns potentially joining together to, quote-unquote, buy an expansion bid, consume the Columbus Crew, and then just have Anthony Precourt walk away from the Columbus Crew and then just move his existing MLS franchise to Austin. How did you take in the news, and how do you view that as someone who's obviously, followed this story from day one? About a year ago, we were talking about this on this podcast.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like a year ago, there was, obviously the infamous tweet from Grant Wall, basically, that blew this whole story open about, Precourt and his intentions to, relocate the club to Austin. So, to be in a situation, a year later where, suddenly there's a concrete plan in place whereby which the Crew might be saved is really promising. It's still a fluid process. Nothing is obviously, 100% set in stone right now. But, when a guy like, Jimmy Haslam, and you got, just the way that the NFL is right now with, the amount of money that's in the league, that would seem like a really concrete, kind of development in terms of the Crew staying there. So it's a really cool thing. It was really exciting on Friday. I mean, I wasn't in Columbus at the time, but you saw so much on Twitter. There's a soccer bar in Columbus called Endeavor Brewing, and that was basically ground zero for all the fans congregating and celebrating the news that club might might stay put. And there were plenty of really funny pictures of people popping champagne bottles and everything like that. So it's really exciting, and we'll see what happens moving forward with just the whole the developments.
I have one thing that I think from all of this, because a lot of times Sporting Kansas City, I think back to their history, right? They got an ownership group that was invested in keeping the team there and establishing the stadium once Lamar Hunt had the team, historic owner, right for the league. But at that time, they needed somebody who was going to step up and really invest in the Kansas City market and throw all of their capital into that instead of like 6 or 7 different markets. That in turn allowed Sporting Kansas City to really develop something and allowed Peter Vermees, a club legend and a big time figure in there, to really dig in and create a culture. One that he has been so adamant about keeping, that he almost I won't say he doesn't want the U.S. men's national team job, but he has so much good things going for him for Sporting Kansas City that he doesn't, the national team job doesn't seem as desirable to him. could a new ownership group and the ability for Greg Berhalter to like really dig his hands in and have a Peter Vermees type control over the club and have a club that's willing to invest in the entire or an owner that's willing to invest in the entire infrastructure of the club from the senior team down through the USL down into the U10s and stuff like that. I mean, could something like that maybe draw Berhalter's interest away from the U.S. men's national team? Because I know maybe a coach, if it was a different situation with Precourt and, you know, all of a sudden, maybe let's say the announcement last week was that they are moving to Austin. Do you think that that the U.S. men's national team situation becomes less desirable to him if he has a chance with the ownership group committed, like maybe the Haslams would be, to really like entrenching himself in Columbus in a place that he played and has a big history?
I think it's possible. I mean, it's interesting that you bring up, you know, the Sporting Kansas City situation, because I kind of thought there were kind of subtle similarities, you know, because, you know, obviously before they built, you know, Children's Mercy Park, you know, they were playing in that, you know, I think in a minor league baseball stadium, and, mm-hmm. you know, they weren't drawing good crowds. And then you had that new ownership, you had the infrastructure development, and now, you know, Sporting KC, I mean, you know, they're selling out every single game, and, you know, they're, you know, one of the best attended teams in the league. So it's possible. I mean, I've been hearing things that, you know, if in a situation where Greg Berhalter does take the men's national team job, that Josh Wolf might be a good successor. You know, he's one of the assistants. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what, you know, takes place from that. But, you know, I really think that if, you know, this goes through and the Haslam family and the Edwards family, you know, finalize this transaction and you get, you know, a proposed stadium and you get, the associated infrastructure build, I really think it's something that could develop like that. And, you know, there have been quite a few pretty good homegrown players that have come out of the Columbus Academy system. Obviously the most prominent of them is Will Trapp. So, you know, I think there's definitely a chance that, you know, with these developments that you could see
John
situation, you know, Sporting Kansas City.
Excellent stuff, John. There's a little bit, I'm going to go more into NFL Twitter right now in terms of the reaction of that I'm sure you're much more tuned into than either I or Dan. And some of the reaction I initially got from Browns fans was a little bit being upset that they weren't trying to do something for the Browns and actually buying a soccer team. Anybody who I think is remotely tuned into American sports is well aware that the Cleveland Browns are not a dynasty by any stretch of the imagination in the National Football League. And, you know, save for, Mayfield Mania, you know, they haven't had, you know, they're having a better season because of Mayfield Mania, but they're still probably not making the playoffs. Is there any concern that, you know, an ownership group is potentially about to absorb the Columbus Crew that historically has oversaw, you know, one of the worst franchises in the NFL space at all? Or, you know, is that tomato, or, you know, just the fact that how much money you're dropping on the NFL is, you know, so much larger than anything you drop onto a soccer team that they're going to be better funded than anything that Precourt was giving the Columbus Crew to work with?
I mean, yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I remember somebody on Facebook when I posted, the news from the, about Haslam purchase, just basically brought up that whole thing with, like, you know, the Browns been so dysfunctional over the, you know, the past couple of years, be careful what you wish for or whatnot. But at the same time, you know, given the situation and at times, you know, as much as, you know, you had the hashtag Save the Crew movement on Twitter and just throughout the interwebs and, you know, just amongst MLS supporters groups, there probably were times when it kind of felt like there really wasn't a hope at all for the Columbus staying there. And that, it, you know, despite all the efforts that, you know, the end game would end up being, you know, Precourt's just going to move this team to Austin and that'll be it. And, you know, who knows what happens. Maybe Columbus gets a USL club or something like that. But I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think it is a really exciting development. But at the same time, you know, everybody knows what's going on with the Browns, you know, for as long as they themselves kind of came back as a expansion team in 99. It really hasn't been, you know, smooth sailing at all. I think they have one playoff appearance since, you know, they returned to Cleveland. But, you know, at the same time, it's exciting that, you know, there is a possible plan in place to keep the team in Columbus. And, you know, if Haslam's a part of it, and the Edwards family and everything, you know, it's pretty nice.
Let's transition to on the field now, John. You know, obviously, the last month or two for the Columbus Crew has been a little bit inconsistent. You know, it's been win, loss, draw, almost in that order as I'm pulling up the form guide right now. And this has been, you know, I'd say a cloud that has been hanging over the team. Whether or not that's been affecting what Greg Berhalter and the players are doing, I'll let you expound on whether or not you think that's affecting. Is there any amount, at least on the field, that, you know, you think that maybe this news, the potential, clarity of the situation is maybe helping or hurting the Crew? And what's been your general thought about this team as they kind of, you know, get, as they've been a little bit inconsistent down the stretch run to the playoffs?
Well, I think the news just probably could just kind of, you know, be kind of a, you know, a monkey off their back. We'll see what happens. But, you know, from an on-field standpoint, I think the main issue with Columbus has just been, especially over the past month, it's just been an inability to find the goal. You know, Jossie Zardes is obviously experiencing a career revival, and I think he has 16 goals right now, which equals his career high. But over the past couple of games, it's really been tough for this team to find the net. And, you know, part of it has been, you know, there just hasn't been any production from you know, their wide players, from, you know, either Pedro Santos or even Justin Merriman when he came back. I think he only has just one goal since he returned from Orlando City. So I think the big issue moving forward is where is the goal scoring going to come from? Can Jossie Zardes, you know, rediscover his form, you know, that he had from earlier in the season? And then can, you know, he get some help? Because he really hasn't for most of the season. You know, I think I don't have the stats right in front of me, but I think really only a handful of players have more than one goal for the team. I want to say it's just him, Federico Higuain, and one other player, maybe Harrison Offal, are the only players who have more than one goal. So I think the big issue is you know, over these next two games, and should they qualify for the playoffs, is you know, a return to the goal scoring form that they had earlier in the year. And if they can do that, you know, I think, you know, they'll get in the playoffs and maybe they can, make a run like they did last year.
Excellent stuff, John. Dan, was there anything that you wanted to ask about Columbus on the field right now, or shall we transition to midweek MLS reactions?
No, I think John's covered it all. He's got eyes and ears and hands more into the Columbus situation than either of us do. So I say we move on.
Hashtag save the Crew. All right, let's begin with midweek action. We will start in Orlando. John, we'll throw it to you. Seattle Sounders get a big 2-1 win over the dumpster fire that is Orlando City SC. What were your thoughts on Rafe Green taking on the Lions last night?
Well, I think it was a result that I don't think many of us are really surprised at, other than the fact that, you know, maybe Seattle, you know, being, you know, all the way on the East Coast, and maybe they'd have, you know, maybe some issues regarding the travel, but that certainly wasn't the case. But yeah, like you said, I mean, I think it just, from Orlando City's standpoint, I think it just reinforces just how much of a, you know, like you say, dumpster fire that this club has been this year. I mean, you know, obviously they had that really bad run earlier in the year, and they, you know, they got rid of Jason Christ, brought in James O'Connor from Louisville City, and there was a little bit of a dead cat. Been a forgettable season, and you know, they end up losing this 1-2-1. But I think it, you know, on the other hand, it's just another example of, you know, Seattle being, you know, this second half team. I mean, I think, you know, over the past three seasons, I don't think we're really surprised anymore to see this team, you know, just kick on the jets late in the season. I mean, it happened in 2016, you know, when they got Ladero and winning MLS Cup. It happened last year. You know, they made MLS Cup once again. And once again, it's happening this year, because I think at one point they were, I think, either eighth or ninth, maybe even 10th in the Western Conference. And, you know, they once again, they go on this really big run. You have another really good summer transfer window signing in Raul Ruiz Diaz, you know, the Peruvian international, played at the World Cup. And I think, you know, that really kind of shows Garth Lagerwey and his ability to just, you know, make the right moves at the right time. And, you know, once again, Seattle, you know, they qualified for the playoffs. You know, they're one of those teams that I think, other teams in the Western Conference really need to be worried about moving forward.
Well, let's move on to Audi Field. DC United were big 1-0 winners over Toronto FC. If you have not seen, folks, I strongly encourage you to get on MLSsoccer.com, Twitter, the app, Twitter, YouTube, and look up the free kick goal that Wayne Rooney scored to ultimately win this one from about 40 yards out, just completely bending the ball around the wall and then just inside the post. Absolutely no chance for Alex Bono, if you ask me. Fairly straightforward result. I was maybe a little bit disappointed in terms of DC United on the performance front. Toronto FC obviously now in hashtag play the kids mode with Greg Vanney putting in a few different players and shuffling through the lineup. Michael Bradley was still in there, but no Jozy Altidore, no Sebastian Giovinco in this one. So, you know, given the quality of the teams and where the teams were at, I was maybe a little bit surprised that DC didn't have a slightly better performance in terms of possession, shooting opportunities, X goals, or anything like that. And this has kind of highlighted really a couple of games in a row where DC's kind of been like that. You know, it took them, you know, it took a lot out of them to beat Chicago a couple weeks ago with Russell Knauss, of all people, getting the goal. I realize that they've had a really congested schedule, but they also haven't been traveling a whole lot. You know, this now officially puts them above the red line, so maybe that allows them to refocus a little bit more going into the penultimate weekend and decision day. But given that they've been playing mostly at home, they're going to be playing better teams who now understand what the team looks like in Benny Ball post Wayne Rooney. I'm just not sure how much I would be threatened, other than maybe Atlanta United without Miguel Amarón, just because DC United is their absolute bogey team, or, you know, maybe in an Atlantic Cup just because that's a rivalry. I'm not sure that I like them in terms of making the playoffs. I'm not sure how I feel about DC once they get there, especially if they're playing that wild card game on the road. Let's move out west and up north. Daniel Sperry, as you mentioned earlier, you were staying up late to watch this one, and you got a treat in Gianluca Busio's first ever goal as a professional. How did you take in Sporting Kansas City rolling over the now dead in the water Vancouver Whitecaps?
Well, it's funny because the now dead in the water Vancouver Whitecaps are still not officially eliminated, but pretty much eliminated at this point. However, I mean, the entire first half, Sporting had a couple of decent looks, but they could never, they just couldn't get the final pass. They were out of sync. The midfield was reading every single ball. They understood what they were trying to do. For some reason, Jordan Much, who I think we might know from some absolute bangers with Cardiff City, while they were wallowing in the relegation zone, still had a couple of bangers for them in the Premier League. Kind of bounced around a couple of a Premier League rejects, we'll say, teams that had kind of bounced up and down as a number 10, and they had him playing as a number 6 in front of the back line. For some reason, that midfield, I mean, they were missing everybody from their starting, the spine of the team. I mean, there's no midfielders, no starting center back pairing. I mean, it was just kind of a mess outside of Felipe and Kai Kamara, and they got a scrappy goal and were up nothing, and Sporting were frustrated, and I think Peter Ramirez was a little frustrated with the effort in the first half. Kind of led into him there in the halftime, and they turned it around, and Johan Kraaze, who for as much shtick as he gets from Matt Doyle, he comes up huge every single time he's been on the field the last couple months, and scored a ridiculous goal, ball bouncing up off the turf, rips it into the upper corner with his weak foot, which is his right foot. If you see that strike, it looks like anything but his weak foot. Makes it 1-1, and then Daniel Shalloway kind of passed it into the net there. After Kyrie Shelton with some brilliant hold-up work and made it 2-1, Gianluca Busio gets on the end of a Johnny Russell through ball, almost whiffs it. He was trying to take it with his right foot, almost missed it, kind of messed up his steps there, and had to get in there with almost his ankle. It almost like went off his ankle bone and off his left foot and into the goal there to salvage that first career goal. The celebration and the love that he got from his teammates after that strike. You see the shots of it on the sideline. Just really cool. See how this whole team has kind of really embraced this 16-year-old kid who played, you know, he was subbed in for Kraaze the moment Kraaze scored the goal. I mean, as he's jogging back to the half line, he subbed out Kraaze for a 16-year-old. Sporting Kansas City's, you know, home playoff hopes are on the line there, and entrusted him in the number 10 role. After Felipe Gutierrez had been out on international duty with Chile for the first time in a while, entrusts a 16-year-old with the number 10 duties. in a must-win match on turf, on the road, and he comes up and gets a goal, looked really good the whole game. Busio's incredible and very wise beyond his years. His ability to pick up the ball in the half spaces and one-time passes and understanding the fluidity and the movement that's necessary in certain times and holding up the ball and kind of keeping on to that possession instead of trying to make the killer ball every single time. His just overall awareness from where he's at on the field to what is needed in the moment in the game is just incredible for a 16-year-old. I mean, he just got his driver's license in May. So props to him. Props to Peter Vermees for trusting him. Daniel Shalloway did add a second there, made it 4-1. That scoreline makes it really look like it was more of a blowout than it really was, but three of those four goals from Sporting Kansas City came beyond the 80th minute. Big statement of intent as they go on to a massive game at FC Dallas this weekend, one that I am absolutely hyped for. And for some, and while Zlatan Ibrahimovic is going to get the national TV love in their game against Minnesota, the FC Dallas Sporting Kansas City is arguably the biggest one this weekend. If Dallas wins, there's a good chance that they go on to win the Western Conference. If Sporting Kansas City wins, it actually becomes a kind of a three-horse race and could eventually have them versus LAFC in the final weekend of the season. Winner takes first place in the Western Conference and gets home field advantage throughout the rest of the playoffs and that first round bye. The loser likely drops to third. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting matchup between FC Dallas and LA and Sporting Kansas City this weekend. There's a lot for the top three spots of the Western Conference riding on that result. And Sporting's win set that up because for a while there, it looked like Vancouver was going to jump back into the playoff race. But Sporting Kansas City, clinical, they won 14 points this season from losing positions. Got three of them last night in a big comeback win there against Vancouver.
I agree with you, Dan, that FC Dallas taking on Sporting Kansas City is going to be absolutely fun, and that probably should be the nationally televised game. But let's be real here. When Zlatan scores from 40 yards out to jump, have the LA Galaxy jump Real Salt Lake in the standings, and then goes over to Hadrian Heath and tells him that he's fired, and then, like, Minnesota United has to deal with that, tell me that that's not... I'm not going to say that that's better soccer. I'm not going to say that that belongs on ESPN or anything, but that's must-watch TV regardless of what you think about FC Dallas and Sporting Kansas City. But let's move on to the roundtable stuff, folks. As we teased on Monday, we will be returning back to our MLS Cup playoff DEFCON ratings. It's now getting very, very simplified with only two games left for pretty much every team in the league. Everybody sitting on 32 games played, and we will be previewing all seven teams that either have not already clinched a playoff spot or have not been eliminated from playoff contention. With the win last night, Seattle Sounders did punch their ticket to the playoffs. We've got three teams in the East and three teams in the West that are still fighting. Two in the West that will be eliminated, one in the East that will be eliminated. So we'll begin with the fifth place Columbus Crew out in the East, 48 points on 32 games. John Baba, give us the, you know, give us the DEFCON rating and why do you have them either at DEFCON 5 making it or DEFCON 1 of, you know, nuclear annihilation?
I'm going to go right in the middle and say DEFCON 3. I think their schedule sets them up to make the playoffs. They, you know, on Sunday they're at Orlando City. We've talked about how bad they are. Next week they're playing at home against Minnesota United. They're out of the playoffs. They're almost kind of like the, I guess, you know, you could compare, if you're comparing Orlando City, NYCFC, you know, getting in the expansion in 2015, and then Atlanta United and Minnesota United. Well, Minnesota United is basically the equivalent of Orlando City. So, I mean, from that standpoint, you know, I think they're set up to make the playoffs. But like I said, you know, it's going to come down to finishing and can they rediscover their scoring touch? You know, if Jossy Zardes and Federico Higuain can continue to, get back into the swing of things with respect to scoring, I think they'll be good. They'll get in. And maybe, you know, based on the Union, I think they play at the Red Bulls this week and then they finish at home against NYCFC, which is a pretty tough schedule. So I think there's a possibility that they could even move up and get to a point where they could host a knockout round game. So with Columbus, I'm going just middle of the pack, really just because of the goal-scoring issue, and I'm just going to go DEFCON 3 right now.
Dan, let's move on to sixth place, DC United, 47 points off 32 games played, one behind the Crew, but four ahead of the Montreal Impact, and I believe this is the first time they've gone a full calendar week, being above the red line in the, over the course of the entire season. Dan, where do you have DC United in potentially making the playoffs in what would I would say is statistically the most impossible run, outdoing the 2016 Seattle Sounders?
Yeah, I mean, John went with DEFCON 3 for Columbus. I might argue that both these teams really should be more at DEFCON 4. They need to win, and they need to go, but both of them have really winnable games ahead. I know DC United is playing New York City FC. That's a very big, tough game, tough ask. DC United has been able to get the job done. They semi-rotated their squad over the weekend, over last night against Toronto FC, got the result. They're at home. They've been unstoppable, but unstoppable at home. I'm not entirely convinced that this NYCFC team away from the postage stamp that is Yankee Stadium's soccer setup. So DC United just needs 2 points to get into the postseason. Columbus Crew only need one. Montreal needs both of these teams to lose twice for them to get in there, to have a shot at getting in. I just don't see actually. So, I mean, they could, DC United could tie twice, and Montreal could win both their games, and they'd leapfrog them based on the wins tiebreaker. But frankly, I have a hard time seeing DC United picking up anything other than 3 points over the last two games. Same with Columbus Crew. I just don't see either of those teams missing out. So DC United for me is probably at a DEFCON 4, close to a DEFCON 3. I'm really not worried about the playoff prospects, honestly, of either of these two teams that are above the red line in the Eastern Conference.
Took the argument right out of my mouth for the Montreal Impact, sitting seventh in the Eastern Conference, just below the red line, 43 points off of 32 games played. And I have them at DEFCON 1 right now, guys, mainly because there's a lot that has to come on that they have absolutely no control over. Like the other two teams that we just discussed about, they have a fairly easy schedule. This Sunday, they'll be hosting Toronto FC. Yes, it's a rivalry game, but Toronto's already out of the playoffs. Greg Vanney's already rotating the squad. Might not even see Michael Bradley in this game. Definitely aren't going to have a Josie Altidore or a Chivinko to deal with, and Toronto's on short rest. That's probably an easy multi-goal win. And then they close out the season at New England Revolution. Yes, it's a road game. New England's better at home than they are on the road. Yes, the game's going to be on turf, but they've already been eliminated from the playoffs. Brad Friedel might be rotating the squad to get a few other players minutes to see how he wants to shuffle the deck in his as he goes into the offseason. So that's probably a result that they get. But like you guys said, they've all got easy schedules. Montreal needs to not only take care of business in their final two games, they need the other team to lose. There's a distinct possibility that they could go in there, wallop Toronto FC 4-0, and on Monday morning, they're already out of playoff contention just because of how they've made their bet so far. So I have Montreal on DEFCON 1, and at this point, one of the other two teams needs to give them a lifeline if they're going to survive. Let's move on to the Western Conference, folks. We'll start with the Portland Timbers. A fifth place in the West, 51 points off of 32 games played, a full 6 points ahead of above the red line. Daniel Sperry, where do you got the Portland Timbers going into this weekend?
Yeah, so I got the Portland Timbers kind of sitting at a DEFCON 4, 5 as well. I'm trying to pull up my little – I have a chart here set up that helps me out. Okay, so the only team that can catch them really at this rate is the Galaxy technically could, but Portland would have to lose out. And somehow at RSL, somebody's going to kind of make something happen. I don't see Portland missing out on this. They only need, 1 point to ensure themselves, to be above the red line. A draw, even against RSL, over the weekend, not only could hurt RSL, but could really help Portland and put them in. I don't see Portland missing the playoffs at this rate. It's funny because I was talking with a friend of mine, Jimmy Mack, formerly, Total MLS, now SBI Soccer. We were talking about how the Columbus or Portland Timbers are only 2 points away from matching last season's point total, which was first place in the Western Conference. This year, they could possibly pass that total and not even have a home game, a guaranteed home game in the MLS Cup playoffs. Just shows the level of competition in the Western Conference this year and the jump that it's taken. This Portland team, though, I just don't see missing the playoffs. As many question marks as I have about them against the top-tier opposition here in the Western Conference, I just don't see them missing it. So for me, DEFCON 4, they need to get some points here. But with a home game against RSL and on the road to a potentially beaten and out of it Vancouver on the final day, I just can't see them not picking up the 1 point that would put them in the playoffs. So DEFCON 4 for Portland Timbers.
Moving on, let's go to the sixth place, Real Salt Lake. They sit on 46 points on 32 games played, just above the red line, but just 1 point ahead of the LA Galaxy. John Bava, first of all, I'll give you the disclaimer. We are doing this as RSL is kicking off against New England Revolution. So by the time this podcast is out, maybe we'll have some new information that, John, you're not working with right now. But as it stands at time of recording, John, where do you have Real Salt Lake?
I'm going to go DEFCON 2 here. I mean, I know they're in sixth place right now. You know, they got, like you say, you got this game with the Revolution going on right now. But I look at their schedule and, you know, yeah, the Reds are out of the playoffs. So they have some pretty good goal scorers on their team. I think Christian Pena leads them. And then Tino Bunbury was kind of one of the more surprising seasons this year as a double-digit goal scorer. But, you know, after this game, they gave a... they have the Portland Timbers on the road, and as Dan said, you know the Timbers are in pretty good shape, but you know, obviously going on the road in Providence Park is always going to be a tough ask. And then I compared their final two games with the Galaxies, which are, you know, obviously they're playing at Minnesota this week, and then they're hosting the Houston Dynamo. Both those teams are out of the playoffs, so I think the Galaxy could get the full 6 points there, and I kind of have a feeling that when all is said and done, it's going to be the Galaxy in that sixth spot, and then RSL is going to be on the outside looking in. They're from a trend standpoint, they're winless in their last four. So you look at that, and it's, you know, they're not trending in the right direction. And you know, though they've got some, you know, Albert Rusnak's one of the best playmakers in this league. They got a really good signing in Demir Krylov in the offseason, but I think in the end, I think LA is going to leapfrog them, and they're going to be, unfortunately, out in the cold. So I'm going to go DEFCON 2 with RSL.
Moving on, we'll move just below the red line. LA Galaxy, the aforementioned LA Galaxy, sitting in seventh place, 45 points off of 32 games played, just 1 point behind Real Salt Lake. I'm going to put them at a DEFCON 3, folks. Dan, correct me if I'm wrong. You've probably been listening to this, listening to me talk about them over the course of the last month or so, where they've kind of teetered, depending on the results, anywhere between a DEFCON 4 and a DEFCON 2. They absolutely have their fate in their own hands. This is the game against Minnesota is going to be really, really interesting. Adrian Heath has absolutely ripped apart his team in the media over the course of the last two games. They had a huge 5-1 loss against Philadelphia Union that he's called their worst performance in terms of the team showing up in his time as head coach, which is a pretty scathing comment given how poor Minnesota was in their inaugural season. And then obviously, you know, they had, you know, Colorado Rapids of all teams basically ended Minnesota's defense last weekend. So this is kind of a weird situation where you're going to have 50,000 people cramming into TFC Bank Stadium. It'll be the last time that they're playing there before they move to Allianz Field. The game's going to be on turf. Zlatan said midweek in his press conference that he is available, he's traveling, and if he needs to start and go 90 minutes, he's fully prepared to do that. That goes against the comments that he and the coaching staff, whether it was Siggy Smith or Dominic Kinnear, have said, basically saying that Zlatan doesn't play on turf. His only turf appearance of the season was 13 minutes off the bench in a 1-1 draw against Portland Timbers. That was the first Galaxy turf game since happened after Zlatan signed. So he went on there. He said, "This is horrible. Why am I doing this?" And basically said, "It's not happening after that." So it's a do or die game for the LA Galaxy. At this point, they'll know where they stand in terms of RSL. The other thing that kind of benefits them, with the odd number of teams in MLS right now, RSL is actually on a bye week. They play tonight right now as we're recording. They play on Sunday, but then they don't play on decision day. I'm going to say if the LA Galaxy are within a point or 2 points of Real Salt Lake come Sunday evening, that absolutely they'll make the playoffs. Whatever result they need to get against Houston Dynamo, they'll know what they need at that point. I think they will get it no matter what. I think it's, can they get there? Can New England do something against RSL tonight? Can the Portland Timbers clinch the playoffs on them on Sunday? Can the LA Galaxy take care of business in what will be environmentally a very difficult situation, in the quality of opponent, a not very difficult situation? So right now I have them at a DEFCON 3, and either it's going to swing to a DEFCON 1 or a DEFCON 5 by the end of Sunday. Let's move on. Last team here, Vancouver Whitecaps. Dan, we're going to throw it to you. 8th place in Western Conference, 43 points off 32 games played, a full 3 points behind, below the red line. Dan, where do you have them, and why is it DEFCON 1?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a brilliant lead. There's no way that DEFCON 1. I don't see this team making the playoffs. To make the playoffs, let's just go over how they would have to make the playoffs. They would have to get a road win at LAFC and then defeat the Portland Timbers on the final day of the season. They would have to hope that somehow either RSL or the LA Galaxy combined managed to pick up only 1 point. It doesn't work. It's not going to work that way. I just don't see it happening. The game against Minnesota could kind of have some danger there for the Galaxy. I don't see Houston as being that much of a problem. Houston's terrible on the road, as usual. We all know this. I just don't see it happening for them. They like I said, the biggest ask is going to be for them to go on the road and go get a win against LAFC, which is interesting because that Vancouver is 6-8-2 on the road, which is the best road record of any of the teams in the Western Conference that are below the red line. However, LAFC have one loss at home all year long, and that was to a Sporting Kansas City team that currently sits above them in the standings on goal differential. I don't see it happening for Vancouver. It's DEFCON 1 because they're still alive. But that missile countdown clock thing that we're looking at is like within the 10-second mark. Like, it's probably going to happen this weekend, and we're just waiting on it to happen. And frankly, if RSL gets a point tonight, then there's no way. So I believe a point tonight eliminates them, if I'm not correct. Or if I'm correct. So I just do. Oh, no, it wouldn't. Never mind. I'm crazy. An RSL win tonight, I believe, would actually eliminate them, because that would mean the Vancouvers could not match them on wins, or despite being able to potentially match them on the point total, and there's no way that RSL are going to go down, are going to lose a negative 11 goal differential at this point. So, a win for RSL tonight does it for them. DEFCON 1. We're just waiting for the missile to hit, and they're done. And they also last thing. Sorry, they're going to have to do it without Kai Kamara because he got a red card after the game. He had been subbed off in like the 70th minute or so against Sporting Kansas City. They received a red card after the match. It wouldn't send a two-way altercation between him and Johnny Russell. Still didn't receive any disciplinary action over it. So all we know is that Kai Kamara did something and got with Johnny Russell and somehow got a red card after the fact. We'll let the imaginations run wild on that, but this Vancouver team without him is probably just gonna go nowhere. So sad end to Alfonso Davies' time in Vancouver, but they're pretty much done.
Welcome to Bayern Munich.
The Vancouver Whitecaps are the Western Conference equivalent of the Montreal Impact in that sense, and everybody at BC Play should be bracing for Impact. Moving on, folks, let's get to Pick'ems. We'll be talking about all things Supporters Shield and a bunch of really interesting games as far as the playoff hunt is concerned. We'll start in the Eastern Conference. We'll start with Atlanta United hosting Chicago Fire, 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Dan, we'll start it with you. I think a foregone conclusion in terms of the result, but definitely relevant in terms of Atlanta clinching their first hardware. Dan, who you got and why?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Atlanta in this one. As much as their fan base frustrates me and a lot of expectations and stuff that they have and ideas about where they're actually at, I just don't entirely see Chicago doing anything here. So 2-0, I'll say to Atlanta. I know they are without Almiron. They're going to have to find someone to kind of pull the strings, but they have enough talent on that team where they shouldn't worry too much. So 2-0 Atlanta. I assume they take it and finish the business this Sunday.
John, who you got and why?
I'm going to second Dan. I'm going to say Atlanta United. I just think there's too much attacking firepower there, even without Miguel Almiron. You also have a Chicago team that's completely out of it. You also have Joseph Martinez, who hasn't scored in the past three games, I believe. And, you know, he's due for, you know, another breakout. So I'm pretty sure he's going to have at least a brace. And I think they're going to win 4-1 and clinch a supporter shield.
I agree with you guys. I think this game is absolutely Atlanta's to lose at this point. I think they'll probably take it 3-1. Yet a nice couple of results in there in terms of a hard fight by the Chicago Fire at DC United, who's a very good team at home. And then, of course, that win that they got, you know, dumbfounding LAFC. So maybe Jordy Mihailovic pulls something out of his you-know-where. I like Jeff Lorenowitz to get a goal in this one as well. Big Red scoring against his former team in the men in red. But I think it'll be Atlanta 3-1 when all is said and done. Moving on, DC United hosting New York City SC. Also at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus for most of you. Dan, who you got and why?
Yeah, I'm going to go with DC United on this one. I kind of hinted by NYCFC's road exploits this year, especially under Dom Torrent. I bought him much more so under Patrick Vieira. I think both sides, both NYCFC and Patrick Vieira, wish that the decision to leave had never really been made. So I DC United in this one for me. I think they wrap up their playoff spot search, or get that nice little X next to the name in the standings, and as apparently every qualified team on Twitter has been doing. DC United in this one. I'll go Lucho Acosta. Kind of runs the show tonight, or that in that game, not tonight. Say 2-1 to DC United.
John, who you got and why?
I am also going to go DC United. They are, I think they're unbeaten in their last eight, while New York City FC, I think, have two of their last 10. So I think that trend continues. And I agree about Luciano Acosta. I think he's going to have a good game. I believe he's second in assists behind the Union's Borek Doçkal. And, you know, he's really been a fantastic playmaker, especially with Rooney in the squad now. So I'm going to go 3-1 DC.
DC United has won 4 in a row, and they've won 6 of their last 8, and they are on an 8 unbeaten streak, and one of those draws was at New York City FC. Wayne Rooney getting a second look at the New York City FC defense. I think he'll get a goal, and I think we'll be looking at 1-0 to the black and red. Moving on, last Eastern Conference game that we'll look at, playoff seeding potential, and also in the context of the supporter shield, Philadelphia Union hosting New York Red Bulls at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Dan, who you got in why in the other northeastern rivalry that doesn't have a name yet?
Yeah, I'm going to go with actually New York Red Bulls in this. I think they know what they need to do to get to kind of keep pace with Atlanta. The pressure is going to be on. I like this Red Bulls team a lot. Personally, I still think they're a better team in the Eastern Conference. Atlanta's kind of had the track record. New York has slipped up a few times, but you know, for my money, pound for pound, I think this New York Red Bulls team is just better suited for a playoff type run. I dig everything that they do and the way that they play. They're pretty kind of ingenious in how they manage their time on the ball and focus more on off the ball movement than they do anything else. And they're an impressive team. They're the kind of team that I would expect to go in and beat a good Philadelphia Union team. So I'm gonna go with a 2-1 win to this one. I think Bradley Wright Phillips has a say at the death there for New York Red Bulls and what should be probably one of the better Eastern Conference games on the weekend.
John?
I will go draw. I think, the Union come into this game really one of the hotter teams in MLS. And, you got to give Jim Curtin a lot of credit for the coaching job he's done. And at the same time, I think you got to give a lot of credit to Chris Armas, replacing Jesse Marsh, who went over to RB Leipzig, and this is definitely a matchup of teams that have kind of found their swagger at this point in the season. You know, the Red Bulls are just a point behind Atlanta. Obviously they have Bradley Wright Phillips, Dan Royer, plenty of good attacking options, and same thing with the Union. I believe Fafa Pico leads them in scoring, and Corey Burke's just been, been a revelation this year. So I think each team's gonna, find the net, and I'm gonna go 2-2.
I'm going to agree with you, John. I think Philly has absolutely woken up since losing in the Open Cup final. They're unbeaten in league play in their last four games and a huge win last weekend, or maybe 2 weekends ago now, 5-1 over Minnesota United. I think this is probably the most intriguing Eastern Conference game that you've got. This is definitely the one where you've got the two teams fighting for the most, opposing each other. I think this is going to end up being a 2-2 draw and an absolute barn burner, and I think we're going to see some fantastic performances on both sides, but ultimately it'll be Philly, you know, securing their seating in the playoffs, and I think it'll ultimately undo the Red Bulls' play for the supporters' team. Let's move out west. The aforementioned FC Dallas hosting Sporting Kansas City, 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus for most of the country. Dan, who you got and why?
This is a really hard one because as much as I like this Sporting Kansas City, what they've done on the road, I have a hard time seeing them getting a win in Dallas. I think this one is going to end up as a draw. I think it'll go 1-1. I don't see either team kind of. I see both teams going for it, and both teams kind of just not being able to. It's going to be a kind of a slugfest here. It's not going to be a multi-goal slugfest with these two teams. So I fully expect either side to get a goal in this one. I also don't expect them to get much more. Kind of keeping it all square and everything standing pat going into the final weekend. So I'll say one in my predictions. I did a Western Conference predictions article last week, I believe, and I said that I think Sporting Kansas City would end up with the 2 spot while getting 3 points in Vancouver, tying against Dallas, and then beating LAFC at home on the final day. I'm still going to stick with that. So I'll say a 1-1 draw between Dallas and Sporting KC.
John?
I think I'm going to agree. I think it's going to be a slugfest because, like Dan said, I mean, this is one of the more underrated games of the weekend. You know, you've got, you know, both teams that are in the thick of the Western Conference discussion in terms of, you know, becoming, you know, Western Conference champion and, you know, getting the advantage throughout the playoffs. So I'm going to go 1-1. Same thing. I think maybe Daniel Chaloui gets one for Sporting KC, and maybe Maxi Arruti or Roland Lamont get one for Dallas. So I'm going to go 1-1 tie.
I'm going to agree with you guys. I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. This is the Western Conference equivalent of the Philly-New York Red Bulls game that I just talked about a couple minutes ago. I think both teams have everything to play for. I think the two teams match up really well against each other, you know, especially with Sporting Kansas City having to play midweek on turf, travel up to Vancouver, and then travel all the way down to Dallas. I think that's going to favor FC Dallas, but they've been just okay to me for the most part. I don't know that there's a distinct forward on either side that I think is going to be a main target threat for the other. I love both of these defenses. I think it's going to end up being a 1-1 draw, and because all three of us picked 1-1, of course, that means that FC Dallas is going to win 3-0 on a Jesse Gonzalez hat trick. Let's move on, folks. Portland Timbers hosting Real Salt Lake, 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Dan, who you got and why?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Portland on this one. RSL, don't know how it'll end. Currently up 1-0 on New England in their match. They're still going to be fighting for their playoff lives. But having a game Thursday and then the quick turnaround on Sunday, a lot of guys played heavy minutes for international break on Wednesday as well, or Tuesday and Wednesday. I have a hard time seeing them being able to carry it out through the Sunday matchups. As much as I love what RSL have done, and Corey Baird literally just made it 2-0. I don't see this one going well for RSL in this one. So we'll say 2-0 to Portland, just because Portland home, RSL road, and RSL's a very bad road team.
John?
I'm going to go with Portland as well. You know, like you say, you got the short turnaround. I mean, I'm sure Mike Petke, I'm sure he rotated the squad a little bit today. But I just don't think that's going to help. Actually, Nick Beisler actually scored the first goal for RSL, Matt Beisler's brother. So that's interesting. But, they've got the quick turnaround, having to go to Providence Park. And, it's always a tough place to play. Portland, pretty solid center back pairing. You know, Larry Smabiala is very good in the air. You know, he scored some pretty good goals over the course of the season, and pretty good impressive campaign. And I think they're gonna prevail. I'm gonna go 2-1 Portland.
I'm going to agree with you guys. I think this is going to be Diego Valeri's special, shutting down what will be, I think, a beaten-up opponent on either side. Either, you know, having the fact that they have to play on Thursday, they've only got 2 days off after that, and then, you know, obviously having to go and play on turf. I think Diego Valeri will ball out. I think Diego Chara is going to shut down whatever Mike Pecky is going offensively, regardless of personnel, and I think it'll be a comfortable 2-0 win for the Portland Timbers, and then we'll be adding the X next to at PTFC. Then moving on, folks, this will be our last game that we'll be previewing. Minnesota United hosting the LA Galaxy, 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, a sold-out TFC Bank Stadium to see the Loons take on the God himself, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Dan, who you got and why?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Minnesota. They're one of the best home teams in all of MLS. I know they got absolutely shredded recently by Philadelphia, but they were on the road, and we know what playing on turf does to teams who don't normally play on turf. This Minnesota team, like I said, fantastic home team. I think Adrian Heath has been really riding them high the last few weeks. They seem like the type of team mentality that just absolutely wants to play spoiler in this. I don't think they're going to be over-enamored by Zlatan if he plays. I know they've talked about him playing, and I know he's intent on playing, but we'll see how much he plays and how effective he is, if he can really give it a go on the turf. So for me, I'm actually going to go with Minnesota getting a shock result in this one and potentially putting a nail in the Galaxy's coffin. I still kind of see things that could potentially shake out to work out for the Galaxy to get that last playoff spot, but doesn't look the greatest. I think they may lose this one. I'll go 2-1 to Minnesota.
John?
I'm going to go with tie. I think, obviously Minnesota is one of the better teams at home. Darwin Quintero is kind of one of the more underrated, DPs this year, 11 goals and 13 assists. And, you know, I think he'll score, but I also think, I think the Galaxy are going to get one. I think Ibrahimovic is going to be a little bit motivated, with the 50,000 in the crowd. He's going to want to kind of strut his stuff. And, I think he'll get a goal too. And I think it'll be, 1-1 tie between Minnesota and LA.
You guys are absolutely no fun as far as I'm concerned. I think this is tailor-made for the LA Galaxy to completely shock the world. I'm in no way being a homer in any of this. I think Zlatan's just going to prove everyone else completely wrong that he does the impossible and thinks the impossible and is the impossible in this one. I think he gets a goal. I think he'll probably set up Ola Kamara for another opportunity. I don't have a whole lot of faith in the LA Galaxy defense, especially on turf, so I think they'll give up one. But I think Zlatan scores a banger to ultimately win it in the final 20 minutes. He looks back at the Loon supporters and says, "Are you not entertained?" And then as they walk off the field in victory, Zlatan goes over to Adrian Heath, tells him he's fired, and Manny Lagos is just going to have to go along with that. With that, folks, that does it for all of our rundown. Time for last words. John, where can people find you on the Twitter, and do you have any shameless plugs and or last words?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at @LWOSJohnBava. Not really too many shameless plugs right now, but it is really cool. Other than the fact that, you know, for the time being, we have saved the crew, and it's nice to be vindicated there, because, you know, a lot of people in that community did a whole bunch of really good stuff and a lot of hard work to try to, you know, get the message to as many people as possible. Morgan Hughes, he's one of the crew's super fans, and he was always like, tell everyone you know, we got to get this done. And for the time being, it looks like we've got it done, and that's really awesome. So that's about it.
Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at @SperryDanieline4. I got no this week. No fun here. Just enjoy the big soccer weekend coming up.
You guys are the No Fun Podcast. Listeners, follow me on Twitter at @LWSMattPollard. Check us out across all social media platforms at LastWordSC. We are on Instagram now. Check us out on the interwebs at LastWordOnSoccer.com for all of our written audio and video content all season long and all year long. You can subscribe to Last Word Soccer Club Radio wherever you get your podcasts. Just search in your preferred podcatcher and search for Last Word on Sports Radio. You'll find us and a whole bunch of other great content. Thank you to our sponsors. sponsors Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, the USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group, your team, or yourself at roughneckscarves.com. Zlatan is a jerk, folks, and if anything the 2018 in American politics has taught us, it's that jerks win right now. Manny Machado's proven that right now with the Dodgers, despite being an absolutely terrible human being, who I absolutely don't want the Dodgers to re-sign, even if they win the World Series. And think Zlatan gets it done on Sunday. I look forward to saying it to Daniel Sperry in his face next week when we preview Decision Day. We'll see you next week, folks.